This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the talented jazz players with ties to New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingalls. If there really is such a thing as living the jazz life, it seems as if sax man Doug Lawrence has done just that. Born in Louisiana, raised mostly in New Mexico, Doug went to the prestigious jazz program at North Texas State University and wound his way to New York City, where he played with greats like Benny Goodman, Dizzy Gillespie, Sarah Vaughan, and the Count Basie Orchestra, with which he still plays today. He's also performed or recorded with the likes of Aretha Franklin, Rosemary Clooney, Celine Dion, and Tony Bennett. Maybe it's not too surprising, given the fact that Doug was the son of a jazz player and band director and sibling to other jazz players. But Doug tells Mark Weber that his dad hoped to steer him toward a more refined career as a symphony orchestra clarinetist. But the young Doug had other ideas.
One day, well, actually, I was homesick with bronchitis for about a week, and my mom went to the grocery store, and he kept his saxophones under the bed. And I was listening to some of his records, John Coltrane, Stan Getz, these records, his tenor records. I said, man, that sounds great. So I pulled the horn out from under the bed and started playing it. And my mom came home. She thought that was my dad playing. She kind of came walking back to the back room of the house with a sexy voice and said, oh, baby, you sound good today. And then when she looked at me, she jumped about 4 feet off the ground and told me to put the horn back under the bed. And then when my dad got home, she told him, and he was really upset. But after dinner that night, he pulls the horn out and says, okay, let's see what you got, you know, and I started playing, and he just started shaking his head. And a few days later, he went out and bought me a saxophone, an alto saxophone.
So are you a natural musician?
I don't know. I guess so.
Because you give off a sense on stage that that the playing comes easy to you. Are you just hiding the fact that it's actually hard?
Depends on which band I'm playing with, how easy it is.
Uh-huh.
Nah, so, I've always been told I was a natural musician. So I guess that's what I am.
Didn't you do, like most jazz musicians, spend billions of hours in your room studying scales and modes? And
no, I didn't do any of that. I liked playing sports and chasing girls. My dad put me in his band. He was working a couple of nights a week here in Albuquerque, the Officers Club, the NCO Club over at Albuquerque Country Club. And then he started sending me on gigs as a sub, working at places like the Solo Club and things like this with people. You know, everybody was 20 or 30 years older than me. But I just started learning tunes, you know, and playing music. And I mean, I learned scale. I knew scales anyway, you know. It wasn't that I didn't, but I didn't sit there and hours on end playing over and over the same stuff.
But you spend a lot of time listening to music.
Listen a lot to music.
Is that part of a jazz education?
Definitely. I think it's the most important part.
It is, huh?
I think so. Yeah. Listen. And don't listen to the cats, the young guys that are the stars now, so-called stars. Now go back and listen to the people who really started playing, you know. Learn your history. Go back to Coleman Hawkins. Go back to Lester Young, and then it's like a chronological thing. You start there and move on. It's like when you're studying history or you're studying math, you don't start, you know, with what's going on today. You start at the basics, and you learn that, you know, and then when you get older, you realize, hey, man, the stuff that's going on today ain't really not that hip. It's much hipper than what was going on back then, you know, and that's what kids need to learn, especially first year. I think the first thing that tenor saxophonists should listen to is Coleman Hawkins' Body and Soul, the classic Body and Soul recording.
What is it about Coleman Hawkins's body and soul that is so important?
It was really the first tenor solo that really just was like so unbelievable. It ranked up there with, at that time, trumpet was the great soloist, Louis Armstrong. Those trumpets were known as a soloist, or altos were known as solos, piano, even trombone. But the tenor was still kind of lagging behind. It was kind of like a lug thing. Well, Body and Soul, which was just a throwaway tune, they were leaving the studio, and the producer says, we need one more tune. And so Coleman Hawkins says, well, let's try this Body and Soul.
We're talking 1939. Who were your early influences as a tenor saxophone player?
Stan Getz, John Coltrane, because they were the most famous, you know, where everybody was listening to them, so I was listening to them. Then I started listening a lot to Dexter Gordon, and I listened a lot to Lester Young because of, that's where Getz came out of, Lester Young, so I listened a lot to Lester Young. But then I moved on. When I got to New York, one of the first cats I saw play was Dexter Gordon, and he kind of took me under his wing. So I naturally, really tried to emulate his playing. And so I went on from there and just really studied everybody. Paul Gonsalves, I was a real Paul Gonsalves nut for a long time in New York, and I got a lot of work out of that. And Ben Webster, the early guys, then I moved on up to guys like Hank Mobley and Gene Ammons and Wardell Gray and players like that. But those players always, I really love those type of players. You know, they weren't the most famous players, but to me, they were the best players.
Tell us about Dexter, hanging out with Dexter. Yeah, did you do anything? Did you go hang at his house? Or you just hang backstage?
Well, he didn't, when I first met him, he was playing at a place in Woodstock called Joyous Lake. I had gone up to Woodstock to hear Ayerto and Flora Purim, and they had got busted at the airport. That's when that famous thing happened with them, unfortunately. So at the last minute, they got the Dexter Gordon Quartet with George Cables, Rufus Reed, and Eddie Gladden. And I went in there and I heard that, and I couldn't believe it. And I was partying, you know, I was standing in the back of the club, and Dexter got off the stage and walked directly towards me at the back of the club and looked down at me and said, what you got? But anyway, he kind of took a liking to me for some reason right away. And then we hung out that night, and I told him I was a sax player, blah, 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 blah. And he said, great, you know, he said, I'll be at the Village Vanguard next week. I'll put your name on the list. And so I went down there and hung every night, you know, and checked him out, and we hung, and he was a beautiful cat. If you ever saw the movie Round Midnight, you know, that's really kind of way Dexter really was.
Did you also follow his edict that you should know the words to the songs?
Always, yeah. Well, that was Lester Young's edict, really. He just got that from Prez.
Uh-huh.
You know, especially ballads. You know, when you play any standards, you know, I learned almost all my standards, all my tunes from singers. I don't learn them from horn players. I learn them from singers.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everything I ever learned. Any standard I ever learned, I always pick a singer I really love. Billie Holiday, Louis Armstrong, Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald. You know, Joe Williams, Tony Bennett, people like that, I'll listen to the way they phrase it and try to phrase it like that, you know, enunciate the notes that way, you know. Huh. If I could sing, I wouldn't carry around that horn.
So you're a journeyman jazz musician in New York City in the 70s, and you, next thing you know, you find you're on stage with Benny Goodman, Mel Lewis, Sarah Vaughan. Tell us, how did this happen?
It happened just by word of mouth. Mel Lewis had heard me and recommended me to Benny Goodman. At that time, you know, I had always dreamed about playing. I'd see these guys on these records, these Thad Jones, Mel Lewis records, Jerry Dodgen, Jerome Richardson, Pepper Adams.
That's the saxophone section.
Yeah, these are my heroes, you know. I dreamed about playing with these guys. The next thing I knew, I was playing with them. And the thing about New York is that word travels fast, you know. And so before I knew it, I remember Mel saying, well, look, I want to give a guy your number. He'll be calling you in a couple of days. And I thought Mel was just being nice, you know, because I had given him a ride. I had a car. I'd give him a ride home. You know, a few days later, Benny Goodman's office calls Phoebe Jacobs and says, this is Benny Goodman's office. Mr. Goodman would like to request your presence over at RCA Studios on tomorrow at noon. And, you know, I thought that it was just somebody playing a gag, but as it turns out, it wasn't. I get to RCA Studios, which at the time was really a fantastic studio, and you had to sign in. And we were in, Benny Goodman was in Studio C. I looked down on the thing. Arthur Rubinstein was in Studio A, and Miles Davis was in Studio B. And I saw all these names that were my heroes, you know, had already signed in before me. I felt like running out of there, man. I didn't belong there.
So how was Benny Goodman during your rehearsal? Was he what would you call it, the audition? Was he tough? Did he put the ray on you?
No, you know, he would put the ray on people when he got mad at them, you know, or if he wanted to intimidate them. But, you know, we played a tune. I think it was Stealing Apples. And he pointed to me, and I blew a solo, and I sat down, and he had no reaction on his face at all. And, you know, I thought I had bombed. And we took a break. And the rhythm section was Hank Jones, George Duvivier, and Mel Lewis.
Jeez.
And and all these other cats, all these superstars. And I was afraid to talk to anybody. And Mel came and put his arm around me and said, he did good, kid, you know. Later I asked him, I said, man, you know, I'm sure I'm fired. He goes, no. He says, you got the gig, you know. It was, Benny had no reaction.
How old were you then?
Early 20s, I guess. I don't know, somewhere around there.
Tell us what the Goodman Ray was.
Well, Benny Goodman would get this look on his face and just stare at somebody and vibe them really badly, you know. He'd make grown men cry, really.
Doug, tell us about this track we're going to listen to right now.
Well, this is a live recording that features a great big band that was basically Benny Goodman's big band, but Benny wasn't there that day. Lawrence Schoenberger was leading the band, and they had guys like Jimmy Nepper, Kim Poplowski, Jerry Dodgen, Mel Lewis, and Randy Brecker, guys like that. And that gives you an idea of the type of band that I was playing with at that time.
Well, what's it like? Tell us what is a day-to-day, week after week, month after month, day-to-day life of a traveling musician traveling the world with Basie Band?
Well, first of all, the Basie Band travels more than any other jazz band. I know in 2004, we played over 320 performances and went around the world three times. People think, you know, because they see you on stage, this is a great glamorous life, you know. And it is for that hour and a half. You're on stage. But that's the easy part. The hard part is getting there and touring.
And you've played at the White House twice, three times?
I played at the White House a lot, yeah. More than that, probably.
For which presidents?
I played for every president since Jimmy Carter, except for this new president.
And if he asks you over there, you're going to go play for him?
They did ask us over there, and we didn't go.
The Count Basie band, they asked him?
Yeah.
Didn't go.
I played both the Clintons inaugural. He's a real jazz fan, that guy.
And he plays, too, huh?
He owns a saxophone.
So now this next tune is one of your feature pieces that you do with the presently with the Count Basie Orchestra. The tune itself called Basie.
That's right. It's Ernie Wilkins' tune, and this is how we close the show every night. And this particular recording is a live recording done in Tokyo in 2004.
Let's talk about Buck Clayton.
Okay.
He was one of the original early Basieites. He's one of the Basieites that actually came out. He wasn't like in the very first band, but he did come out of Kansas City with that band. And you guys became very close.
Yeah, he became kind of like my second father. Well, you know, Buck Clayton was the Basie band. All those tunes that you see Count Basie's name on, those tunes were Buck Clayton's and Lester Young's tunes. They used to take, they made $7 a week, that band. And everybody would take out a quarter from their pay and give it to Buck, because Buck could write music down. And what would happen is Lester and Buck would come up with the riffs, and Buck would write the music down.
What does it mean when we say a saxophonist plays real greasy?
That means he's doing something right. Greasy. Greasy means he can play the blues, and he's really swinging, and he's got, you know, it just makes you feel like letting it all loose.
What's the greasiest thing you do on saxophone?
I love to play the blues,
Doug,
man.
Doug gave me that look.
Well, you know, the slow blues. You know, I love playing the slow blues, you know. That's about the greasiest thing. I try to play everything a little greasy, you know.
What do you have in the wind now for your small groups? Do you have anything you're working on? Do you have any prospects for another record? Or?
Yeah, I have. There's two record labels that have been really bugging me to come up with some product for them. But because of my schedule, I've been so busy that, you know, whenever I'm not working, I'm just kind of relaxing here in Albuquerque. But this year, I'm definitely have to get a couple of records out. I'm going to do something with Jimmy Cobb. Hopefully, we've been trying to do
The drummer Jimmy Cobb.
Yeah, the great drummer Jimmy Cobb.
The drummer from Miles' record, what's that?
Kinda Blue.
Kinda Blue.
Which is still the best-selling record of all time, jazz record. I play with Jimmy and his band, Jimmy Cobb's Mob, and we enjoy playing with each other, so I'm trying to do something with them. And also, I'm thinking of doing something with some of the local rhythm sections in New Mexico. There's some couple of really good players here, we've been talking about trying to put something on track. Kevin Hayes is a great piano player who moved to Santa Fe recently and has a wonderful trio. And so I was going to try to do something with him and a couple of the other guys in town.
Doug Lawrence, I want to thank you for sharing this oral history with us and telling us about your life. Blessings on your continued good life here in Albuquerque and New Mexico and on the road.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and I love living in Albuquerque. I hope to stay here more and more.
Doug Lawrence on saxophone, interviewed by Mark Weber. To learn more about Doug Lawrence and to hear more from our interview session with him, visit our website, newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org, for more profiles of jazz musicians with New Mexico ties. The Jazz of Enchantment radio series is engineered by Nola Daves Moses. We had help from Carol Boss. Support comes from the New Mexico Humanities Council, the City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, and Good Radio Shows Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.